Warning, the following podcast contains coarse language and spoilers for the film and the title of the podcast. Now hit me with that theme.
Now playing movie reviews in 20 cues.
Hello, yeah, okay. Hi, everyone.
Yes,
it is. That's the idea. Somebody forced me to watch a movie and look what's happening.
Oh,
hello,
hi.
Everyone. Heaven forbid
that
these guys that
old?
I forced to watch movies all the fucking time, heaven forbid that they have forced me to watch one movie, and they've done it. It's Devil Wears Prada. Joining me is Stacey, one of those whoa voices here in the background. How are you, Stace? How's it going?
I'm super excited to be here today.
You're super excited to see me talk about this film as well, aren't
I
you?
I am.
You've been brimming with excitement 2 days since we watched
exactly.
it.
Exactly. I was so happy to think that you were watching it. We were in a different city at the time we watched this, which is quite unusual.
Stacey has very different fetishes from most people. Listeners is what we've learned from that conversation.
Yes.
If this is what makes you excited, then good for you, Stacey. Other voice, Liz. Liz yeah. is actually in the studio with us.
Now I'm kind of regretting it after like getting involved in one of your fetish conversations, I have to say. But no, it's very exciting to be here, Stacey.
Yay! Yeah,
I'm up for the weekend and yeah, we're chilling out.
Yes.
In the studio.
As I mentioned, the film we're doing, Devil Wears Prada, which basic plot of the film, Andy is a young graduate aspiring to be a journalist. She comes to New York and becomes an assistant to one of the city's biggest magazine editors, the ruthless and cynical Miranda Priestly. Starring Anne Hathaway as Andrea Sachs, aka Andy, Meryl Streep as Miranda Priestly, Emily Blunt as Emily Charlton. I always love that.
Do you think they're like, oh, look, I can't be bothered trying to remember that I have a different name this time. Just call me my own name, please. Like, I just...
Maybe. And Stanley Tucci as Nigel. Came out in 2006, has a 7.4 out of 10 on IMDb, 75% on Rotten Tomatoes, and 62% on Metacritic.
Okay,
here we go.
So what's your score, Sam?
Here we go.
Why don't
hosting.
You start us off?
Yeah.
Why don't you host the rest of this, Liz? This was your choice. I'll do the blurb.
I'm pretty sure it was M's choice.
It was no. You've been petitioning this for
like
ages.
This film. It's just a good
You've been
film.
Scratching to do this for ages.
Okay,
you've been
sure.
poking your back with a stick, but you got out of your cage, and now look what we're doing. We're doing
right.
this. I'll do the blurb, and then you can start us off and all that sort of shit. Haven't heard this podcast before. What we do is we review a movie by asking 20 weird and wonderful questions about it. Start with a sandwich question. We then move through 9 questions that can be applied to any film before 3 personal questions and finishing on either a listener or a Patreon question. This week, it is a listener question.
Excellent blurbing, Sam. Well
There's
done.
The blurb. What's our first question,
five.
Liz, even though I've just said it? What's
All
our
right.
first question?
All right. I would like to hear your guys' compliment sandwich or otherwise. So, Stacey, would you like to take it away?
I'd love to. Okay, my first good thing about this film is Stanley Tucci. He's so good. If he wasn't in this film, well, there would be no real other male characters except for boyfriends.
He's almost
right?
like I'm with that.
Almost like the true MVP of this film, isn't he?
Almost. My bad thing is this is a personal preference only, but I just can't get past Anne Hathaway. I do not like her.
That's why we got married, babe.
So weird. I think she's so cute.
I just don't understand it, but she grates on me, so I'm sorry. And my final good thing is I loved the fashion montage scene where she gets all dressed up and she's walking through New York and she's got all these different outfits and hairstyles and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, this is the whole movie. If it finished now, I wouldn't care. It was so good.
Fair enough. As a score out of 10,000 turquoise belts.
I actually think the IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes guys would bang on around the 7,521.
That's a lot of belts.
Yeah.
A lot of belts. My first good thing. Is it my last good thing?
It could well be. I'm prepared
could
for
be.
It.
The first 2/3 of this film are actually really enjoyable, right? It was well paced. It was intriguing. Literally could have turned into a horror film. Would have loved it. It was awesome. Final third?
What?
Didn't enjoy it. It just started getting like I know this is supposed to be a comedy as well as a drama, but it just started getting way too slapstick and ridiculous. And like they're introducing like the love affair of the swanky goddamn, what's his name again, Christian guy. I was just like, oh, there's too many elements that are getting introduced that don't really need to be there. But then final good thing, yes, this is getting a compliment sandwich, is that I surprising end for me. It left things open. It did. Left things open, like wide open. Like we've got questions about this later, so I don't want to spoil it. But it left it with enough like ambiguity there that you're like, There's no neatly tied bows. You know, there's no comeuppance for a character. There's no, you know, like, she didn't dropkick Miranda Priestley out of a window, which would have made fucking sense.
But it's quite realistic. Like, it was just kind of like, well, this is life. So it continues. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So how many belts for you, Sam?
So there's a score out of 10,000 cerulean turquoise. I've changed my mind on what the colour was. Belts, who cares? It's all the same. 6,005.
I don't think you learned anything from this film, Sam.
6,005.
All right, well.
Oh, that's quite a good score from you.
Yeah, that's better than I expected. I mean, I do think that this film is a good film.
Aside from my one bad thing, which was like, it felt so grounded in reality and it was just like, I mean, aside from the fact that I've got a question about this. Aside from the fact that I feel like this girl would have told her to get fucked and walked out of this job long fucking time ago, at the same time, it seems real until the final third. What about you, Liz? Yeah. What do you got?
All right. So I am starting off my sandwich with, actually, my sandwich is not too dissimilar to Stacey's in a couple of ways. So my first one is the actresses. So I just, you know, I actually love Meryl Streep. I love Anne Hathaway and I love Emily Blunt. I think all three of them are excellent. I don't care what you guys say, but I just felt like they all meshed really well. They really owned their roles. Like, it was just really nice. And like, come on, it had Meryl Streep. Like, she's just fantastic. And she was, I don't think anyone could have done Anna Wintour the same justification. I think I broke Sam, so that's
No, yeah, listeners, see what happens when Liz says something I completely disagree with and I'm going to bring up later in the podcast, is I usually just slide my head away from the video camera so she can't see me. And I've got to hide here. I'm covering up my face. I'm spinning around in my seat and hiding behind a curtain. This is hard.
Sorry. Yeah, but I think, you know, Anna Wintour is like, that would have been an interesting role to do, and I think she did a good job. My bad thing is I felt the movie kind of glamorized eating disorders. Like, it was all very, oh, you've got to get down to a 4, you've got to get down to a 2, let's get a stomach flu and like lose weight and I only eat a cube of cheese. And it's all just sort of shown as quite, ha ha ha, and well, it's just what you have to do to look good. And I think that was a bit disappointing, really. Like, I feel like they could have managed that a little bit more.
Does it glamorize it or does it satirize it?
No, but there wasn't anything that really made it look bad, because no one like had any problems with it. They all just got to wear nice clothes once they lost weight. So it wasn't like it, you know, it was kind of seen as just this, oh, well, that's what you have to do to be in fashion. I thought it was a bit of a shame. And I realise that is probably the case, but
yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was going to say.
I'm like, cognizant that
none of us are walking fucking catwalks anytime soon.
But,
hey.
Yeah, I was like, rude. And yeah, my final thing was the clothes. Like, I'm not even a massive fashion person, but it doesn't mean that I can't appreciate, like, a good outfit when it's put together. And, like, some of those are great. I do have to say, I really did not like the orange poncho. I'm not going to lie. That was a pretty terrible
fashion
choice.
Was a bad pick, Nigel. Come on.
Yeah, but he's like, you'll take what you're given. I'm like, nah. No, do you know what? That's what would have made me walk out, like, if I have to wear this orange poncho, I quit. Like, that is what is going to drive me out of here.
Poncho was a bad choice.
Playing into your last point, wasn't he picking that because it's the only thing he thought she would fit?
Well, yes, absolutely. But it was just like, yeah, I'd be like, do you know what? It's just not worth it. I love this film. Like, I think the story all sort of flows nicely and stuff. I'm giving it 8,228 turquoise belts.
Wow.
I've watched it a few times. It holds up on each watch and, you know, I like it.
So question number 2 is a Patreon question. Comes courtesy of the amazing man that is Dan Brennick of Netflix and Swill. Dan, you guys know, he's one of the guys behind Livestream for The Cure. He's the man. If you want to know anything about Netflix, his show is the show to check out. And what Dan would like to know is what?
Who was the true MVP of this film?
Already given my answer, Stanley Tucci. What do you got?
Yeah, I think that was pretty much my answer too. Like, he's the one that actually just solves everyone's problems and has the only good answers for the shots, and like at the end, like gives up his dream for his friend and stuff. Like, it's a no-brainer, right?
Yeah, it is.
He's almost like needs to be ruled out of any movie he's in, because Stanley Tucci is often the best performance in everything he's in.
He's fucking brilliant. Like Hunger Games. Like, he stole the show in Hunger Games, and his part's only like a bit part, but he was so good.
Yeah, Easy A, he was really good.
Oh, I loved him in Easy A. Yeah. He's a bloody legend, eh? Mm. Like,
he absolutely is.
Yeah.
Did we all have Tucci? Would you?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, let's move on to question number 3.
Nice and easy.
Chris Yeni's question, what song would you have inserted into this film and where? Liz?
All right, so I tossed up a couple, but I'm going with the scene when Andy is sort of walking along towards, right at the end of the film, when she's walking along the promenade with Christian in the Paris nightlight, and he starts kissing her and they're obviously going to sleep together. I think that the song should kick in. It's Voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir? Come on, it's obvious.
It's so obvious and on the nose, and that's what this question's turned into. Oh, we all do. It's great.
So cheesy.
I'm sure you've got something on the nose. How on the nose are you?
I do, absolutely. So I've already.
Are you a nasal cavity? Are you that on the nose?
Yeah, I'm
on the nose, actually. Hang on, fuck, what am I saying? Okay. Are you the bridge?
I don't know what's going on.
I don't know either. Okay, so I've already talked about the scene. I love the fashion montage, but I just think it could have been jazzed up a bit with a bit of I'm Too Sexy.
Nice. Would you like to sing a bit of it
no,
for us?
No, I would not.
Okay, so yeah, that was pretty on the nose. Here's my on the nose answer. There's a point at the end there where Miranda has broken Andy. She's literally broken her, got to a point where Andy's just like, nah, what do I do? What do I do? So imagine if The Clash, Should I Stay or Should I Go, started playing at that point. Because if she stays, if she goes, she'll be in trouble. But if she stays, it'll be double.
Oh, yes. Nice. All right. We're up to question four.
Yes. Comes courtesy of Dave Baker. Dave has his own Patreon at patreon.com/yourfavorite. On it, he posts a ton of awesome content. What's his question, Liz?
Hey, he'd like to know which character would have the biggest social media following and on what platform?
Oh, it's got to be Miranda for sure. 100%.
I can't imagine her being too social media-y.
She's not going to. She's got a team of people on Instagram cultivating this perfect Instagram.
Exactly.
Oh, I don't know, like, would Anna Wintour have a massive social media presence? Because that's who it's based on.
For business purposes, sure. Yeah. I don't know. I've never actually looked.
I don't think they wouldn't have time for their own personal account for, like, tweeting and stuff. But there would absolutely be something where you're like, can follow Anna Wintour and, oh, look at this great, you know, this great outfit I spotted on blah blah blah. Or,
this new stuff that you've never seen before.
It would be Instagram,
behind the scenes.
I've got to ask you this: like, do you reckon Anna Wintour would have a bigger Instagram following, or would Giselle Bundchen have a bigger Instagram following? Because Giselle Bundchen's in this fucking film.
But she's not herself, is she?
She's just a random.
But she's still Giselle Bundchen. I don't give a shit. Look how hot she is.
Right.
Oh yeah, we haven't accounted for the icky man factor.
Yeah, exactly. The icky man factor.
That's a lot.
Do you know how many people could not give a shit what Giselle Bundchen thinks about anything but still follow her?
Yeah. Boobs. We didn't account for boobs.
Yeah. Good point.
I'd like to think that males have evolved past boobs and now it's boobs, bum and the face.
Oh, their faces.
And their face as well. It's their entire body now.
I feel so much less sexualized.
I feel like we've, exactly. We've evolved past. Nick Haskins is up next. Nick runs Nikolai's Kitchen, a cooking podcast, and also the founder of The Godfather, the most amazing man there is in the podcasting world, because he is the man behind Livestream for the Cure, which we are going to be on very, very soon. There will be a trailer at the end of this, and we'll give you guys some more information when it's close to the time. Anyway, what's his question, Stacey?
His question is, what type of meal is this movie?
It's caviar. It's something very flashy and expensive, and there's a demographic that really, really enjoys this. Not me. It's not really for me.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that it's not a valid food.
Oh, absolutely. Exactly. It's not shark fin soup or something like that. It's not something that's absolutely detestable and you've got no idea how the hell people like it. It's nothing like
that. I mean, it is fish eggs.
Well, it's cucumber. I don't like cucumber, but a large percentage of the population
does. I don't like cucumber either.
Hang on a sec. Flavor. Cucumber and caviar are totally different things. And they're not
meals. No, they're not. They're both still sea.
They're not meals either.
Well, okay, actually,
caviar is a meal.
I would say caviar is a meal for these models in the movie.
It is.
Like, that's probably
it's a three-course meal over the entirety of a day. That is pretty much all they have.
Okay.
Okay, fine. It's a cube of cheese. There you go. You happy?
Everybody likes a cube of cheese.
Except everyone does like a cube of cheese. God damn
Just
it.
Stick with caviar.
Yeah, I'm going with caviar.
I am going to say a Michelin, like, three-star main course. Like, it's got – it does have all the things you need in a movie – but the concentration is more about how everything looks pretty. Like, it's all about the looks. And you look at it, you think, my God, that is so beautiful. Like, such cool clothes and everything. But, like, then you have it, and it tastes good and you like it. But it's not as, like, deep and meaningful. Like, it's not like a hearty stew or something. It's a little delicate three-star Michelin meal. What about you, Stace?
Okay. I agree with you. I think it is a leaning towards fine dining. But it's not small. It's a huge steak with, like, truffle butter or something like that.
Oh, like she eats in the movie.
Yeah.
Well, she doesn't eat it.
Oh, she did. Exactly.
She throws it angrily in the sink. What a waste of fucking steak.
Exactly.
I was
someone
like, bitch,
needs
that's
going to
be such a good steak. Eat it.
Yeah.
We talk about bad things in the movie. That was my worst thing. Watching somebody waste a steak is I'd like rather be kicked in the balls.
Yeah. Professionally cooked.
This
yeah.
isn't like on Parks and Recreation where Ron's like, you call this a steak, take it away and bring me all the bacon and eggs you have. Like, this was an actual steak.
Yeah. Ron would have probably
And surely
it.
That would bring you more joy eating your boss's lunch and just being, fuck you. Delicious. Oh, I hate you. Oh, this is so good.
Protein is good for you, isn't it? Even if you're trying to be skinny.
She needed to eat as much protein as she could. All right, Sam, why don't you take us over to question six? Because I'm just diving back in here.
Yeah, exactly. Question number six is a Patreon question as well. Comes courtesy of the amazing woman that is Emily Higgins. Emily's going to be on very soon with these two to do Cruella. I cannot wait to not watch that movie. It's going to be great. It looks terrible.
You are watching that movie regardless of whether you're recording a podcast.
It depends on how many beers you get me. Anywho, Emily's question is, what movie would you pair with this to make a double feature?
Okay, so when you're finished watching this film, like one of the key things that sort of sticks with you is, or like you think about is like, God, like what were the horrible bosses that I've had? Or like, who did I really hate as a boss? So I say that you just follow it up with the movie Horrible Bosses so that you can like get that status. Cause you probably go, oh God. And she didn't even win against her. And like, you know, she like Miranda kind of won in the whole scheme of things. But now you can go and watch Horrible Bosses and see about people trying to murder their own bosses and see if that like makes you feel better about things.
It does feel like a spiritual sequel, actually. Yeah, that's a good point. Does.
Next level.
I had a similar jumping off point. At the end of the film, I was definitely curious as to the, you know, what the film was based on. And so I'd like to pair this up with the September issue, which is a documentary about Anna Wintour, Vogue editor.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see the comparisons and stuff. Like, because obviously there were a lot of things in that film that they took quite directly from her.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what they kind of changed or were different or, yeah.
Exactly. I'd be curious to know, yeah, like you're right, like how similar they are. At the same time, I'd love to know if Anna Wintour has actually watched this film and what she thinks of it.
Surely.
I don't care what anybody says about me.
Yeah. Exactly.
True.
Yeah. But yeah, I totally agree. I'd totally curious as well. I kind of want to Google and just see if there's like been an interview with someone asked her and she said anything about it or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if you can guess my movie, Stacey. What's another female-centric movie in which the main character tries to fit into a different group or society that she's not really a part of? That she's really different and alternate from, but she tries to fit in and they're all fashion conscious and they like all pretty and they're all stuck
Clueless.
Up.
You're mean so Girls. Close.
Mean Girls, of course it's Mean Girls. Liz, you. Who's my wife? Who's my wife?
You got me there when you said pretty and like fashion conscious and I was like, okay,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely it's Mean Girls.
Hey,
love Mean Girls.
Could have been Clueless.
Could have been Clueless as well. I do love Clueless as well. That's
but they were
one
nicer
my,
to
my favorite
Ty.
From that sort of genre. I'd love Clueless. Absolutely love Clueless. Anywho, that moves us over to question number seven, courtesy of Julio of the Contrarians podcast, where they basically take a film that's universally beloved, argue why it's rubbish, or they take a film that's pretty much universally hated by Rotten Tomatoes critics and argue why it's awesome, while they give a bit of like a rundown on the plot, and then they do real talk at the end where they give their like their actual opinions about the film. And, you know, sort of sum up how facetious they were being or not. Anyway, what's the question there, Liz?
It is, what's your most controversial opinion about this film?
Okay, I think that Anne and Emily should have swapped. They
should
have been cast in the other's role.
Interesting.
I literally thought that the entire time. Emily Blunt feels way too lovable to be the sociopath that dances between hating on Anne Hathaway in one scene and then like, oh, you got to do a good job or I'm going to get fired.
Yeah,
but I thought she added value in that because it meant that you didn't just straight up hate Emily. Like it made you still have sympathy for Emily because you were kind of like, oh, you're still quite likable even though.
Yeah. Do you need sympathy for that character?
I don't feel like
you do.
No, I don't think you do. Like she's supposed to be a badass for the entire of
this
the
one. But has Anne Hathaway played that kind of total bitch?
Yeah.
In what?
Wasn't she Cruella or?
No, she was in The Witches.
Oh, Witches.
She was,
right.
She was Catwoman in Dark Knight Rises.
She's very doe-eyed ingenue. Like, she's got that very sort of naivety around about her.
See, I don't see that.
Whereas
I
Emily
see this
Blunt, I'm like, I love the bit where she's just like, okay, I'm hearing this. I want to hear this. Like, yeah. You know, I think like, that's fucking gold.
But okay. I thought it would have made more sense. It's like Anne Hathaway being an American girl who's kind of got a smug look about her. And I know Stacey agrees with that opinion. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, you could add Emily Blunt, this British girl who's in, like, New York, got no idea what she's doing. You know, all that sort of stuff, you just, like, sort of fish out of water type thing. I could have seen that. I'm actually with you. I agree with that. I'm going to go one step further, and I'm going to say Meryl Streep should not have played this role. Meryl Streep is too lovable. Meryl Streep is awesome, harrowing, like, you know, like harrowing roles where she has to display vulnerability. She's also awesome in, like, comedic roles. Great in Kramer versus Kramer. Great in Deer Hunter. Great in so many different films. This film and Little Woman, where she has to play this, like, cold-blooded sociopath, just don't buy it. There's just something too lovable about her.
It's so funny.
I know you completely do. Yeah, I see you
really
shaking my
totally
head.
Disagree.
Like, I couldn't believe, like, I was just like, oh, that's Meryl Streep trying.
She just brought depth to it for me. Like, she really delivered and made, I really like that she made it a human character as opposed to a caricature, because it could have easily been a caricature, and I really like that they brought in that human element towards the end where she's obviously pretty gutted about Stephen, but she's just carrying on.
Yeah,
I just don't think anyone could have delivered it the way that she did and make you appreciate her for what she was doing and what she was trying to achieve in her life and stuff. Like, I just thought it was a perfect casting.
What about Glenn Close?
No, I think she would have been too much of a bitch. Yeah. That's the thing. I think you actually needed to have those characters. Otherwise, they're just, to me, like I said, caricatures. I feel like you need that realism of well, look, they're still people.
See, I could imagine, like, Glenn Close would have been way too evil with almost, like,
yeah,
past
I feel like
redeeming.
She would just been like,
but at the same time, there was just, like, I get what you're saying, but at the same time, like, I felt like she was going to smile through most of the films. So when at the end, it was like she finally smiled and it was like this big revelation, I was like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't felt that built up sort of thing. I'm trying to think of someone else, but like Gina Davis or Sharon Stone or someone like that. Someone that just has this like perpetual sort of like uneasiness about them. Whereas Meryl Streep just felt too welcoming and comforting. Even when she was being a bitch, I was just like, I don't buy it.
Oh, wow. No, like, I totally
don't get me wrong. Okay. Yeah, like, yeah. On a scale of 1 to 10, I felt like she was an 8.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying, I don't think she was at a 10 like most people say. So even though people are listening to this and thinking, I probably thought she was shit, I'm not saying that. I'm saying she was really
good. She's usually
a 10. Meryl fucking Streep.
Yeah, she's usually
not nominated for fucking Oscars for no fucking reason. I just didn't find her at a 10.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying I don't get what you're saying. I just disagree. Yeah. Which is kind of the whole point of this question, right? And I think that mine is probably going to be a controversial opinion here, because I think that Emily deserved not to go to Paris.
Why?
Because she...
Is that because she took COVID to work and spread it around?
Yeah, well, actually, partly. No, it was like you could see that she was just losing the plot a bit on it. Like, she forgot the Hermes scarf thing. Like, how do you forget that? Like, that's such an important job. You've got to do your pick up your Hermes scarves on time. And, like, Andy was totally nailing it by that point. I just was kind of like, I don't blame Anna Wintour. I don't blame
Miranda,
thanks. I totally blanked on her actual name. I don't blame Miranda for wanting to take Andy.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying, Liz. I can see what you're saying. Question 8?
Yes, and question 8 is, what was the biggest dick move in this movie?
I feel like we have to rule out everything Miranda does. Like, you guys can answer that if you want, but I feel like it's just too obvious. So then I went with Anne Hathaway, and Anne Hathaway did a couple of, like, kind of dick moves, like, you know, not worrying about her boyfriend's birthday and being mean to her friends and all that sort of stuff, turning into a different person. But I still think after Emily Blunt gets run down by a taxi or whatever in the middle of the road, and then Anne Hathaway shows up at the hospital and is like, oh, by the way, bro, you know the thing that you're most looking forward to this entire fucking year? Yeah, you're not going to that either. I was like, okay, that's pretty dickish. That's pretty dickish.
Yeah, well, she just didn't have to tell her that it was because of that she's doing a bad job. You just be like, oh, look, you're not going to be able to go because of the moon boot.
Exactly. You've got a perfect out.
Yeah.
You've got a perfect out delivered to you. But it's just like, hey, funny how you broke your leg. Anyway.
But that had to be in the film for later for Miranda to tell Andy that she had actually.
But then why did they have Emily get hit by a car anyway?
Because that was in the book, actually. If you read the book, that's the reason why she doesn't go. It's there isn't this whole element of Andy.
But
being
I like
chosen.
That element. I thought that was really good. Like I like what they were trying to tell with that story of her doing that. But then, yeah,
it's because
Emily just didn't have to be hit by a car.
Well,
that was the start of the downfall for me. That was the part of the
third. They needed
that
the Umi scarves to go everywhere in this fly up in the sky. They needed that scene.
Yeah, they shot it that day. They needed to put it in there.
My question is.
Your question or your answer?
No. I mean, just my question on the Hermes scarves, so it's slightly tangenting, but I'm doing it anyway, is do you think that people gathered up those scarves and gave them back to her, or do you think they kept them? Because we just looked it up, and an Hermes scarf, the most expensive one on the American website, it now sells for $6,750.
The thing is, your average Joe blogs on the street would not know that they're worth shit.
No, that's probably true, actually.
You
might recognize the bag. You might go, oh, that's a fancy shop, maybe. In New York.
Yeah,
maybe.
In New York. Mm. In New York, just like your average person going about the day. You know, the more wealthier people aren't going to be out on the street.
I don't
think
we're in the average suburb here. Like,
yeah, this is
downtown Manhattan. I've been in downtown Manhattan. It's mostly tourists. Mostly tourists are just going to be like, whatever.
Yeah. I feel like people would be nice and be like, oh, that poor lady got hit by a car. Let's get her scarves. Because she obviously really likes scarves because she has a lot of them.
Yeah, she had like 10 bags full of them.
Downtown Manhattan, where Banksy once sold a couple of his paintings to a New Zealand woman who bought them for $120. And no one else brought them. And then they basically went up to her and said, by the way, did you know you've just bought a couple of Banksy's? She's like, what? And they're like, yeah, they're worth about $10,000 each.
And there you go.
No one recognised that. And he's one of the most recognisable street artists in the world.
Well, anyway, that's just random thing that I thought was funny. I didn't cut out what Miranda did because I felt there was one.
Oh, no, like go hard. I just felt, for me.
Well, I feel like a lot of the things I didn't necessarily count as dick moves, like as the biggest dick moves, because they were just general, like, you know, her being herself. But one thing I really felt was a dick move on her part was not warning Nigel that the situation was happening at the end. Like, she should have given him a heads up and not let him just find out that way. Because they were, like, he was her closest colleague, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that she just let him find out along with everyone else, knowing that he would be crushed.
Yeah.
That was unnecessary. Like, I thought you probably had 2 minutes where you could say, look, this is happening and you're going to be very disappointed, but it is what it is, or whatever.
Yeah. Mm. That being said, he did some pretty dickish things to Anne.
She's just a bloody intern.
She needed the hard
work,
though.
Of view.
Yeah.
She was dumb.
I think my fundamental disagreement is that the business should not be run like this. But
well, I mean, yes.
No shit.
I think that's the hardest part I had for this. But anyway.
Okay. My biggest dick move in this film was, it was similar to yours. It was related to when they were in Paris and Christian told Andy about what was going to happen. I'm like, he really likes her, doesn't he?
Mm.
And he knows how important this job is to her now, over time.
Yeah, yeah.
So why would he do that? He, you know.
Like, tell her?
Yeah, what was happening.
Isn't that nicer that he did that, though? Because that way she could actually try and do something about it.
But why would he want her to do that? That's not the reason he was telling her. The reason he was telling her was to gloat.
Oh, yeah, to show off.
It was involved.
It's kind of
looking
at me. I'm going to be really important in this new business.
Yeah, exactly.
It was probably going to fuck you over.
Let's remember this soon. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Anyway, question number 9. What was the most preposterous leap of logic in this film?
I think it was that anyone would buy that the person doing the cover art for the Harry Potter book would have the entire manuscript and they'd be able to give it to someone else for them to take away for a couple hours. No way. Those were like the most tightly held books in like history.
Yes.
As someone who's had his cover art done for a book and the cover artist was like, what's it about? Or what do you want? You know, they didn't give a shit. They're not going to read the entire fucking book.
And also, they're like J.K. Rowling. They're going to go, what specific scene do you, or you're like, what do you want it to look like? And they're not going to read the book first. I was just like, nah, that's not happening. I don't believe that at all.
Absolutely. What about you, Stace?
Mine is also related to Christian again. I just don't buy that he is completely spellbound by Andy. Like, he meets her and is like, oh, bowled over and wanting to be charming and sweep her off her feet. Like, I feel...
We've got a question about it soon, but he's so just trying to get down her pants. He doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, well, I thought it was a bit...
Exactly. So why isn't she like... I mean, she does question him a couple of times, like, you don't just say stuff like that.
Well,
he's
quite good looking and cultured and stuff, and so she probably is like, oh, wow, you know, this man seems interested in me. He's not the kind of man that you should ghost me, I guess.
They're both smug. Okay, they're both smug going for smug.
Yeah, because
This
guy is, like, up there, right? He, you know, like, in terms of his career. Like,
yeah.
And she's just, like, Miranda's assistant.
Yeah, so he probably likes the idea of having this, like,
power play.
You know, this naive older man, woman to be impressed by him. And, and like, he's like, oh, you know, she's like, oh, wait, why don't you go and find another woman or something? And he's like, I don't think I can. I'm like, you've met her like 3 times, bro.
These are just shit that guys say to girls. He's so
we know this.
It's so cringe.
She just didn't.
So cringe.
Anyway,
easy one for me. Meryl Streep, aka Miranda Priestly, lives at the highest level of fashion, right? She only likes brand new, original ideas, all that sort of stuff. Like, the cutting edge of just opulence. Mm-hmm. Yet she drinks Starbucks?
What? That's weird.
The fuck? Okay, part of me realises that in America, Starbucks is like coffee. Like, that's like the best of the best, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like small boutique artisan.
American coffee is terrible.
Exactly. American coffee, yeah, by and large, is terrible. I'm not trying to brag, but New Zealand has pretty good coffee. Like, other parts of the world have amazing coffee. But I couldn't get over the fact that she gets Starbucks. And then I was like, yeah, well, come on, be smart. Starbucks has paid, what, $500,000 to be in this film?
100% it was product placement.
It's,
yeah,
all it is product placement. She's drinking 4 fucking cups of coffee every fucking time as well. Piping hot. Starbucks. Nothing. They throw a fucking steak in the sink. They don't throw away any cups of Starbucks at any fucking point because that shit is fucking liquid gold. What the fuck was that shit?
100%.
I agree.
That was very egregious product placement, eh?
And here's another thing.
Oh, God. Did you have another thing?
No.
Okay, good. All right.
I don't know. Well, here's another thing. They're giving thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars worth of clothes to Anne Hathaway and then never seeing them again.
But they don't care.
They don't give a shit. They're just like, oh, well, fucking, she's the only girl around here that can fit it. Yeah, she can take it home.
That's how, like, that industry works, though.
It's insane. So, yeah, anyway, that was my, like, what the fuck. Last question that can be applied. What is it, Liz?
What two characters have slept together and not told anyone?
Clearly Meryl Streep and Emily Blunt's characters. Emily and Miranda.
No
way.
No.
I'm telling you, man. Like,
no, that's a controversial opinion and a leap of logic.
Yep. Why?
I agree.
And a dick move.
The trifecta.
And a stupid face.
Yeah.
You don't think they've gotten sloshed up at, like, the Paris Fashion Week?
No.
Miranda
got
does home. Not get sloshed up.
And then Miranda's been like, okay, I need some relief, and they just used her as like a saddle or something. Come on.
No way.
No.
Not in a million years.
No.
Really?
Yes.
I see it, man. I see it. I can totally see it.
Emily, on the other hand, I'm saying I absolutely think that she is a part of this combination, and I am guessing that it's her and Gazelle Bündchen. Because, A, if you have the option of being Gazelle Bündchen, you're going to do it. And you can absolutely see those girls getting all rat-faced on Cosmopolitans and then, like...
Yeah.
Really?
You know, engaging in some fun times. Well, like, at least with, like, a threesome with some hot dude them in the bar or something.
Okay.
Who are you saying?
Well, I think, I don't know why I'm fixating on him for the last three questions, but Christian and Jacqueline from The French Show.
Oh, yeah.
Because how did he get that job? For fuck's sake, he's just some writer.
Like, yeah, legit.
It's weird.
That's such a good call.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
100%. Nice. All right. Now it's my questions. So I would like for question 11 for you guys to cast yourselves in this movie.
Sarcastic bald dude.
Okay, but where would you fit in?
Stanley Tucci.
Oh, right.
Come on, man.
Oh, I was distracted by the fact he knows things about fashion. And
oh, I know.
I'm looking at you right now.
Yeah, okay. I'm not dressed up to go out on a catwalk at the moment or go to work, so.
Oh, yeah, come back Monday morning. Yeah.
Okay, could any of us fit into this fucking movie? What do you want me to be, the barista at Starbucks?
Oh, no, look, yes. I'd be Andy.
Makes sense. The dude in the street that doesn't realise there's a $1,000 scarf blowing
You're
through the
window. You're the taxi driver that runs in Emily Blunt.
If it was Anne Hathaway, yes, I would have ran her down, and I wouldn't apologise.
No, see, I'm Andy. I've been in that job as the EA, like, overworked and underpaid, and, yeah, so I was just like, yeah, 100%, that would have been me walking in going, and I kind of had done something like that, and I'll talk about that in one of these later questions. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, that explains a lot. Explains why you probably connected with this film.
FYI, listeners of Movie Reviews in 20 Qs, I would not run over Anne Hathaway and not apologise. I just want to get that out. I was just joking.
So you
please
would
don't
apologize.
Come arrest me, FBI.
So everything else in this discussion is serious, but that
absolutely.
Part,
no. Absolutely. I feel like I need a disclaimer just in case I'm in the news for accidentally running over Anne Hathaway and people are like, he did that on purpose. And yeah, I probably did. But I
you'd
have apologized. Yes, I would apologize.
Now we understand.
And you'd give back almost all the scarves. Except a couple.
Before Sam gets himself into an actual legal quandary, Stacey, what was your opinion?
Well, I'm actually on a similar level to Sam. I'm like, I can't really see how I'd fit into this film either, but I do really like food, and Nate has he works at a restaurant, he's a chef, right? So I could just be a restaurant patron in the background at his restaurant.
You could totally be Nate, because you love toasted cheese sandwiches. It's like one of your things.
Yeah, I do. Mm.
Do you like making them or just eating them?
Both.
Both, yeah. She loves both.
That's not so bad. Yeah. Would you use Jarlsberg?
I don't know what that is. Do we have that?
It's
in
quite
New
a
Zealand?
Mild sort of cheese. I've eaten it in Switzerland.
No, I like more flavorful cheese.
I think it's quite mild, but I might be talking shit. It's got holes in it, I think. Oh, I don't know. Fair enough. All right. Question 12. given that, you know, size and weight was such a big thing in this movie, I'm curious whether you think either Emily Blunt or Anne Hathaway gained or lost weight to be in the movie.
No, absolutely not. Neither of them did. This is just what they look like. And at the point Anne Hathaway was size 6, and then later when she was size 4, she looked exactly the fucking same. So I don't think she lost any weight or gained any or anything.
That was the funny part, is like when you compare her and Emily Blunt, they're not dissimilar body shapes.
Yeah, they're very similar. And then Miranda, like Miranda at one point's like, oh, the fat girl. And I was like, oh my God, what would she call me?
Jesus. Yeah, exactly. The chronically obese girl. Yeah.
She'd be like, oh my God, get out of my office. Yeah. That's all.
That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, no, fair enough. I was thinking the same thing, but I was curious if you guys had the same opinion. And for question 13, I'd like to know if you think Miranda's soon-to-be ex-husband, Stephen, was justified in wanting a divorce.
So, not necessarily justified, but here's the thing that I apply to all relationships, is if you don't feel like you're getting what you want from a relationship, then you just leave. That's your decision. Like, you can't make people change. You can't put expectations on people that you know they won't live up to. And I feel like that's what he's done in this, is he's like, he's kind of sick and tired of her being the center of attention and all that sort of stuff. But the thing is, like, when you get into that relationship, that's what she's doing. And you can't expect her to change. You can't expect her to be different. It's like guys that start dating strippers and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe my girlfriend's down there dancing a fucking pole every night. It's like, well, you knew that when you met her.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. And they made it very clear that this was not like a relationship that she'd been in for 40 years.
It was her second marriage.
The second marriage, yeah.
So in which case, he absolutely knew what he was getting into.
Just to, like, follow that, I feel like he maybe went into it with, like, an optimistic thing of, like, yeah, you know, I could handle this. And then found out he can't. Okay, he can't. See it. Done.
Yeah, you know? It just kind of sucks for everyone. Maybe think about it a bit more.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of agree with what we're all saying here. But I think, yes, he is justified in wanting a divorce because you're allowed your own opinion. That's his thoughts. And, yes, maybe he was happy with it for a certain time. But for whatever reason, it's not working anymore. Yeah. So, yeah, he's allowed to.
Fair enough. Very reasonable answers, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stacey's questions.
Yes. Okay. So at the ending, it was left quite ambiguous. So I want to know, do you think that Andy got back together with Nate and went to Boston, or did she stay in New York City or something else?
I feel like she's had so much of a personality change throughout this film that it's too far gone for her and Nate to patch things up now. I feel like they've become such fundamentally different people that they don't recognize each other anymore and what they used to see in a relationship. I think she's had a moment of realization of, like, oh my God, what the fuck have I done? But I still don't think that's enough for her. I still feel like she's, as we've seen throughout this film, she's become too goal-orientated, too fixated on her work as opposed to her personal relationships, and I can't see her packing it up.
I agree that she's sticking in New York because I feel like she probably got that job that she wanted. Mm. It was exactly the kind of job she wanted, and she wanted to do well in her career. And, like, why would she pick up and change her whole life for a guy who wanted her to move to another city? Who arranged it in like a week, by the way.
Did he want her to move, though? Because he was sort of like, yeah, we're done, I'm out of here.
You know, well, that's
true. He didn't really want her to come along, but he said, oh, you know, he sort of like hinted at, like, hey, if you wanted to choose this, then.
Well, I'll get to that next. But
maybe that was more from his side rather than hers.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah.
Okay. And Andy had to do some pretty weird stuff for Miranda. So what's the most ridiculous task you've had to do for a boss?
Okay, so as I mentioned before, I have been an executive assistant for quite an array of different bosses. And something you really learn is that every boss has got good points and bad points. And the very first guy I worked for was the CIO of quite a large financial services company, so pretty top-level executive. And the most stressful time was when he flew to San Francisco, and he changed his flights about 4 times. And on the 4th time, I didn't read the itinerary as closely as I could have, and I didn't realize that the flight, they'd rebooked him on a return flight that was leaving at 12:40 instead of 14:20. So, like, just the two numbers were switched around. Now, I noticed this before he actually got, you know, before it was a problem. And I caught up the thing, I changed it over. And so I texted him and said, hey, or emailed him and said, hey, I've now noticed this, I've fixed it. All you have to do is check in at the airport. And he came back and it was, this is an unmitigated disaster. Fix it. That's it. That was my email back. And I was just like,
what?
I can't. Like, they said you have to, like they wouldn't let me do it online because I wasn't like a specified, you know, person on his BA account or whatever. Yeah. So I went down the pub because it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday or Thursday or whatever. And I was just like, fuck this, I'm going to lose my job. So fuck it, I'm going down the pub. And his manager comes out because this is in London, right? So that's what you do. And then basically his right-hand man comes down to the pub and he's like, you've got to fix this. I'm like, I don't have an answer, Julian. I don't know how to fix this. And he's like, well, what would Lisa do? I'm like, oh, Lisa. So I was covering a maternity cover role and I literally called his EA, got her, his old EA, got her password and then called back to BA, pretended to be her and gave her password. And then they let me roll him off the flight and put him back on and get him checked online. So I made it happen. I couldn't believe it. And so I emailed and said, that's all fixed now. You will not have to check in the airport. You can now check it on your app or whatever. And he was just responded with like, TX. Thanks.
What a dude.
Yep.
What an absolute disaster having to check in at the airport as opposed to on your phone.
Like,
that is insane.
I literally cried. Like, I cried and then I went to the pub because I was like, well, alcohol will help.
Yeah, good.
Hilarious.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. At the end, he described me as a wee diamond in the rough. So it was very much a sort of Miranda moment. Yeah.
I've got one. Mm-hmm. When I worked at a supermarket throughout my end of high school and university years, we used to work a Friday night shift. We would close up at 10 o'clock at night. And our manager that was working at that time, her name was Kelly. She was probably about 6'2". She was quite a tall woman. She used to not like the idea of walking to her car alone late at night in the dark. So she used to ask me to walk with her, which, okay, fair enough. Rugby playing boy, I'm only 5'9", so I'm about 3 or 4 inches shorter than her, but I'm a bit of a beefcake. Makes sense. The reason why it's ridiculous, I'm a massive fucking pussy. If somebody came at us, what the fuck was I going to do?
Like, shove her in the way and go, take her first.
Cry at him.
Don't hurt us.
Please don't hurt us. That's why it was ridiculous.
Maybe you're the best of a bad bunch, Sam.
Yes.
You just reminded
me. No, there was other guys there that were like way bigger, taller and stronger
I think
than me.
She liked you. She must
maybe
have liked
or
you.
That she was the only one that she actually felt comfortable with in the dark.
Yeah.
She thought all the others were dodgy.
Nah, yeah. She was trying to sleep with me. I've just worked it out.
And you're like,
I wonder why she kissed me that time. That's
Sam,
weird.
Okay. And
I was just gonna say that just reminded me of when I worked at McDonald's and they made me clean a ladder with a toothbrush.
What?
they just hated me.
It was a really
quiet
day.
They just hated
and they were
you.
Like, oh, they did. No question about that. They absolutely hated me at McDonald's. But here's something to clean, and you can clean it with this. I was like,
I wonder what they hated you at McDonald's. I can just imagine, like, hey, you can have a 6-pack of chicken nuggets. Funny fact, do you know how much chicken is actually in those nuggets?
100%, actually. The chicken nuggets are fine.
I knew it.
No, the chicken nuggets are fine. No, it's because I was smarter than them all, right?
Here come smugglers. It's been a while since we've had smugglers.
I am so smart.
Here she is.
I am so smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
I mean S-M-U-G.
Okay, guys.
Good old smug lesbian.
Let's just change the topic here a bit. Because we haven't really discussed them a lot. Nate or Christian?
Oh, Nate all the way. Nate feels like, okay, he's a bit of a sarcastic asshole, but at the same time, this is his girlfriend. He's watched his girlfriend completely change into a different person. Like, you know, she's clearly focused on her career and wanting to advance herself and all that sort of stuff. But I still feel like, you know, like if you're in this relationship with someone and they completely change and you're just like, you're going to be upset. Like, I felt way more sympathy, whereas like Christian, I felt was just a scumbag. I just like we talked about before. Yeah.
I fundamentally disagree that Andy changed her personality. I feel like she was still herself. She just was really stressed out and had a lot of work to do.
She changed.
No,
she
I don't think she did.
Massively changed.
She was always driven from the beginning. She took that job. She didn't want Miranda to get her down.
How many clothes changes
did
she have?
Yeah, but I mean, you can change the clothes and that. Like, that's not
your personality.
And I'm sorry, I think Nate was a douche. Okay. I don't think he was a good boyfriend at all. He was never supportive of her. Like, I know you think he was, but like, the night where she's sitting there and she's really stressed out about how she's going to tell Emily about Paris or whether she should or whatever, and he just comes out and is like, are you coming to bed? It's like she's clearly having a hard time. I think a supportive boyfriend would come in and go, hey, you seem really stressed out. Do you need to talk about something? Like, are you okay? Mm. And like when they're in the restaurant and she's like, oh, my boss is calling and I've got to get it, I would hope my supportive friends would be like, shit, get the phone quick. Your boss is really mean. Not, ha, 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 let's try and make you lose your job. They were all dicks too. And it's a one birthday for 1 year. Like, she was very clear, was I want to work for it for 1 year. Let me finish. Very clear the whole time. I want to do this job for a year, go to Paris the next year, meet all the editors and chief of stuff. She already gave it one the opportunity to meet up, like, the, was it the editor of New York Magazine? So, like, I feel like she was still really trying to hang on to being a good person. And the job put pressure on her to do that. And in the end, she did say, no, this is where I draw the line and I'm cutting it out. So I don't think she did change. I think she was always driven, and he maybe didn't see that and he didn't like it when it came through.
Yeah.
And then at the end, I found it pretty stink that he was like, oh, well, by the way, while you're away for 1 week, I went off and got a job in Boston, so I'm moving to another city, and hey, you can come move with me if you want or not. But
they've broken up.
It's all
she slept with another dude. But come on, man.
A, he didn't know that, and they were on a. They said we were on a break. So we're taking a separation. Yeah.
Jesus Christ, we I mean, friends.
No, okay, don't get me wrong. Like, I don't actually. Yeah, I do actually think they probably were broken up and whatever. But he didn't necessarily know that she'd slept with the guy, right?
I think he'd realise this girl has changed so much. This is no longer the girl I want in a relationship.
For him, he was just suddenly like, okay, well, I'm making this big life decision change, and that's fine because I'm making it and I want to do it. But then she was like, well, I want to make a big life change. Oh, no, well, you're doing a terrible job and you're letting everyone down. I was like, nah, I thought that was.
She'd already made a big life change. She'd already chosen to sacrifice the weekends and nights and all that sort of stuff. I don't know how you support someone when you barely see them. I think what we've discovered here is that Liz is more goal-oriented with her work, whereas I prefer someone that's like way more about relationships and building a...
And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, but I just think if you're with someone, and she was always pretty clear that she wanted to have this good job and do well in her career, then that's something... I don't understand people who are with people, but they don't want to support them and give them support in the thing that they want to do.
Okay, so you hate Nate. Does this mean you're going for Christian?
Oh, good point.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you've said all this stuff about Nate. He's the other guy's a scumbag.
Oh, well, no, so he was an obvious scumbag. That was too easy. Oh, I was like, yeah, right. Like, he was obviously just, I would have absolutely slept with him. Yep, he's pretty hot and he's probably good in bed. But no, I'm staying single, if that's my choice. Sorry. Yeah. And look, that's clear, because I'm single and I'm just not going to settle for someone who doesn't support me in my drive and what I want to achieve.
Good
I'm also not going to end up with a dude that's going to be a slimy creep.
I'd rather be with someone that
saying that I think
half supports me or doesn't really give me as much support as Liz would like than be with a guy that's clearly trying to exploit me.
I wouldn't be with either.
I know you're saying that, but what I'm saying, like, for Stacey's question. Yeah,
see, I actually think Andy should have gone with Christian because he would have got her further in the career that she wanted. So actually, for Andy,
but then she would have been using him, and that would have made her a worse person.
Would it? If you're using a user, does that matter?
How do we know he was using? Who was he using?
He was using it for sex. Like, he was just talking about that. I don't know.
Anyway, that moves me over to my questions. And yeah, as we've just been discussing, at what point should she have told Miranda to get fucked? Clearly, Liz doesn't believe she should have told her to get fucked at any point. But
I said when she called her fat, that was unnecessary. When she was like, "Oh, when I hired the smart fat girl," I'd be like, well, no one said personal attacks were necessary, so fuck you. Mm. Like, to be honest, though, I do think she should have given it the year. I would have, like, if I'd gone to, like, another, like, my dream job at the New Yorker or something, they're like, oh, you work for Miranda for a year. Hell's yeah, we'll give you a job.
Yeah.
I would have stuck it out for a year. I would have just done it.
Okay, so it's actually a similar story to what you told, Liz. I think it's that Miami flight. There's a hurricane.
Yeah.
There are no planes flying.
Let's be reasonable.
Like, I would have just been similar to you. I would just hung up the phone and gone to the pub and gone, okay, oh well.
I'm pretty resilient, but like when she started intentionally calling her a different name, I was just like, what the fuck? Like, that probably wouldn't be enough for me to tell her to get fucked, but that'd be something I'll be sitting there like stewing about. And you're right, when she's like, no, you need to get me a flight out of here, I'd be like, come on. And then she like starts chastising her. She's like, oh, I thought you'd go over and above, but clearly you don't. I was just like,
and that's when
fuck
she gave
you.
Her the Harry Potter task.
Yeah. Okay, my next question, as we've discussed, Christian managed to get a hold of a Harry Potter book before the Harry Potter book was released. He claimed to know the cover designer who had a copy of the book. We've sort of already started to talk about how that's probably bullshit. I wonder from you guys, how did he really get a copy of the Harry Potter book?
I think it's pretty obvious from who he is. He's obviously J.K. Rowling's toy boy.
Oh, damn, that's what I had.
Yeah, I figured everyone would have that.
I mean, that's what I was thinking when I wrote this, is like he clearly spit-shined J.K. Rowling's.
But also, he stole it. He didn't go, hey, JK, can I have a copy of that? He just picked it up out of her office or something like that. He's that kind of guy.
So he could get action with the other girl.
Yeah, I want to see that in Ocean's 9.
More heavily guarded than like the safe in the casino or whatever.
Yeah. And my final question. Yeah, I mean, we've sort of danced around this a little bit, but do you guys reckon Andy will grow up to be another Miranda? Because as Miranda says, I see so much of myself in you.
Yeah, but I think it all comes down to that choice. And they really, really push that message about choice home. And I really liked that in the movie that they had that as an overarching theme. And to me, she kept trying not to be. She kept trying to make choices that didn't. And like a lot of times she said, I don't have a choice, don't have a choice. But in the end, she does take the choice that could hurt her.
But again, like this is Miranda with 30 plus years of experience. You don't think like in 30 years time Andy's going to be that ruthless? Don't think she's going to grow into that?
No, I think this is, she's learned it this way. You know, she's learned from this experience and she won't be. What do you think, Stace?
Yeah, I think if she became a writer, she would just be a writer. I don't think she's interested on that hierarchy ladder climbing kind of stuff. I think she's more.
I feel like she is. Liz is going on about how she is.
No. I think she's more interested in improving her craft and writing better articles or better from that perspective.
She wasn't driven just for status alone. She was driven for what she wanted to achieve in her career. Very different things. Like whether you do you want to be a CEO because you really think it'd be amazing to run a company and do all the business parts of it, or do you want to be the CEO because you'll be really well known and important and everybody will look up to you and respect you?
Yeah.
Miranda, part of it was, I think Miranda was actually both.
Miranda loved the power.
But Miranda loved the power as well. Yeah. Whereas I think Andy would only do that because she wanted to make the best magazine there could be. Do you know what I mean? Like,
But professionally, I think we're talking about professionally, but personally, potentially she could end up like Miranda with broken marriages and whatnot because she will not pay those relationships attention unless, like you say, she has learned from this experience.
I think
basically, like the phone call you answer, that's the relationship.
Yeah.
That's the person you're in a relationship with, right? Yeah. As the movie says. But I can imagine her just becoming just nothing.
Was there any bits where she just ignored his phone calls? I was like, has there been any evidence that she doesn't answer his phone calls?
Yeah, I don't feel like that would make for much of a point of this film. You know what I mean?
Like no, but I think, like, you know, if you're saying, well, you answer their phone call, but then she answers everybody's phone calls. Like, it wasn't, I actually found that line a bit weird.
I feel like she only, who fucking cares?
Anyway, I think it might also depend on the relationship. If she found someone who had a similar sort of work ethic or drive or ambition, perhaps they would support each other equally, and so it wouldn't work out that way. So maybe Christian would be better for her in that way. I don't know.
They could be ships in the night and not really.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, like some people that's not a problem, but then some people that is. So
absolutely.
And neither way is right or wrong. It's just who we all are as different people.
Exactly.
Cool. And that moves us down to our final question, which was a listener question that we threw out there to you guys, our dear listeners, to answer for us. Put out a poll, which I'll have the results of after this question. But I want to know from you guys, who's the most insufferable boss in film history? Because obviously Miranda's up there, right?
So in the poll, actually, one of the options you gave was from Office Space, but I'm not going with that one. I'm going with the boss at the restaurant of Office Space, where he's like, Jen, you don't have your, whatever her character was. And he's like, why don't you have more pieces of flair? And she's like, you asked me to have 15. He's like, but look at Brian, he's got 32. I'd be like, I want to punch you in the face. He was just this incredibly frustrating, annoying boss. And what's really frustrating is there's a fuck ton of hospitality bosses exactly like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. What about you, Stace?
Well, Bill Lumberg was the first name that jumped into my mind when I saw this question. I was like, yeah, it's got to be him because I can't stand apathy in the workplace. You know, like he was just completely incompetent and just did nothing.
It's just an ongoing, like, you'd just be, he'd be insufferable.
Yes, exactly.
It is, it's insufferable. He's just a middle manager that's just, like, got no purpose whatsoever aside from going around annoying people. Like, that's a great answer, Stacey, but I'm going to need you to come in on Saturday.
if you could already get onto those Saturday TPS reports, that'd be great.
So he won the poll. He got 47% of the vote.
Yay.
Yeah, like by miles. Mark Zuckerberg from The Social Network got second. Liz Grossman from Tropic Thunder came third. And then Miranda from Devil Wears Prada, which I feel like is, I don't know, maybe like sort of identifies how little people have seen this film, came 9%. I feel like for most of our people that are answering on Twitter, it's just like,
hey, well, you never know. I think the word insufferable, did you use the word insufferable on the poll? Yeah, I think that really.
Yeah, to me, that's not the same thing.
It's slightly different, yeah.
She might be frustrating or like she might vex you, but I wouldn't say that she'd be insufferable.
I don't know if I could suffer through her. I don't think I could do that at all.
See,
I would be taking a slash in her handbag every time
I've worked
back to
for people not quite that bad, but like I've worked for a number of people who are pretty full on and you just kind of get on with it. Whereas, you know, you think, oh, you're a dick and move on. Whereas if it's someone who's just, at you like Bill Lundberg, you just be like, oh my God, I hate you so much.
Yes, exactly. You can't get around it.
Having a look at some of the answers for this, or some of the people that commented on it, Chris Yeni said, great cue. What about Frank and Christmas Vacation? That's a great answer, Chris. That guy was an absolute dickhole. M from Verbal Diorama said, my vote goes to Lumberg. I actually only saw Office Space for a first time a few months ago, but he's the worst. Miranda is awesome. I wouldn't want her as my boss, but she's awesome. Also, I think she would get some credit for helping with the Prada persuasion. That's all. Thanks, Em. Good little quote at the end. Julio from The Contrarian said, Zuckerberg's a fucking weasel. At least the other three won't hide behind someone else while you're fucking you over. Valid point.
Legit.
Duty said, Andy in the office. If it was TV, lol. Our good mate Duty from Shaken Not Nerd. He's correct. Paul from the Countdown podcast, another podcast you guys should all be listening to, said Lumberg because Gary Cole, and he's the closest to reality that we've all experienced. And I think he's got a very good point there. I've worked with a Lumberg. I definitely have worked with a Lumberg. That's a story for another podcast.
That's probably it.
Steve from Everything I Learned from Movies said vote for the thickest boss, which was Les Grossman. A good mate, Hendo from the Movie Journey podcast, said Lumberg. Absolutely. Good work, Hendo. Another podcast you guys should all go check out. Kyle and Nick on Film said Colin Farrell's character in Horrible Bosses. Holy shit, that's a good call as well.
Yeah.
He was such a dick.
Yeah, 100%.
And over on Instagram, Super Movie Bros Dave said Jordan Belfort, compelling character, but fuck, I would hate working for a guy like that and his Hitler-like speeches to rally his troops.
Oh, okay, well, I mean, as soon as you invoke Hitler, all bets are off, right?
Yeah.
Thanks for the Goblin's Law.
Exactly. I never gave my answer. Darth Vader. Fuck working for that guy.
No, who's the other big boss?
The Emperor. Yeah, fuck working for both of them.
Yeah.
At any point you come to work, is I don't like you. What does that mean?
Yeah, at least Miranda will just fire you, not like slice you in half with one of those laser things.
Although being tortured slowly by Miranda or having my being choked from a distance by Darth Vader.
You could quit for Miranda.
Yeah, exactly. Quitting the Empire is basically getting shot out into space.
Pretty much.
Yeah, anyway. Anyway, that's the end. Thank you to these guys for joining us. Thank you for Liz for coming in the studio. This has been amazing. Well done, Liz.
Yeah, it's been really fun.
Welcome back. And thanks, Stacey.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, it's been super fun to have Liz here and, do it all in person.
Cool. No idea what's coming up next because we're recording this well ahead of time.
St. Trinians.
No, that's not happening. It's Machu's birthday week, so we are going to be doing one of Machu's choices for his birthday. He's turning 30 for the 10th time, so there's a good chance that we might be doing the 40-year-old virgin. Because pretty much what Machu is.
Oh my God, we should.
Absolutely. If you want to get in contact with us, you can find us on Twitter at Movie Reviews In, or you can find us on Facebook, just search out Movie Reviews In 20 Qs, or you can send us an email at mritqs@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram at Movie Reviews In 20 Qs. Yeah, that's pretty much it. That's thanks from me. That's all.
No, that's all.
Just end the shit. Bye.
That's all.
Goodbye. Hello, everyone. Sam here again to just give you a little bit of an update on livestream for The Cure. Dum Dum here did the conversion wrong and actually had the time wrong for New Zealand time. So if you want to watch livestream for The Cure, it's at midnight on Friday the 21st of May, Eastern Standard Time, which translates to 10 p.m. on Pacific Standard Time on the Friday the 21st. But because we live in the future, that's 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday the 22nd in New Zealand. So if you're one of our loyal New Zealand listeners and you want to listen to us, Saturday 22nd of May, 4 p.m., we're going to be doing a version of the show live. If you happen to be in Melbourne or Sydney, it'd be 2 p.m. in the afternoon on Saturday the 22nd, or if you're in Perth, it'll be midday, 12 o'clock. In London, unfortunately, it would be 5 a.m. on the Saturday morning of the 22nd. So our UK friends, if you want to get up at 5 a.m. and support us, that'd be great. If you sleep through it, so be it. We'll probably end up putting a recording of the live stream for The Cure online at some point. But yeah, coming up soon is a promo for it. But before we get into that, just got to do a quick shout out to Em from Verbal Diorama. She had an amazing episode on Devil Wears Prada. You guys should all go check it out. I mean, we've talked shit about it. Em's been a way more thorough in describing everything that goes into it. Go check it out. It's great. Anyway, here's the promo.
My name is Nicholas Haskins, and I'd like a moment of your time to tell you about the 5th annual live stream for The Cure. To do that, I brought along two people whom I couldn't do this event without, Gerald Morris and Dan Brennick.
Over the past 4 years, the live stream for The Cure has raised over $30,000 for the Cancer Research Institute.
That contribution is helping to fund research into cancer immunotherapy. training the body's immune system to fight all forms of cancer.
This year, we're aiming for our biggest goal yet as we try to raise $15,000 in 50 hours on the air.
Tune in May 19th through the 23rd as we're joined live by podcasters and content creators from around the world.
With your help, we can continue the fight for a future immune to cancer.
Together, we can make a difference.